For the record, this is the GNSO IRTP Part D PDP Working Group, scheduled from 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. local time.
Okay, thanks and welcome. And it looks like we're up and running, so if we could, we have the recording started. Is that what the thumbs up meant? The thumbs up means we have the recording started. So good morning and welcome to this standing room only session here in Durban, South Africa, where we are going to kick off the IRTPD, that's transfers, working group. We'll go around the table here for introductions, and then we'll go through the folks who have who are participating remotely. And we're going to, I'm going to wait for him to swallow his coffee, and then we're going to pick on Bob to start us off. Name and affiliation, please.
Bob Mountain, Name Media.
Chris Chaplow, Business Constituency.
Rika Konings, Icon Staff.
Simonetta Batagasido.
Lars Hoffman, Icon Staff.
And I'm James Ladle, co-chair.
Mikey O'Connor, the other co-chair.
Graham Bunton from Two Cows.
Barry Cobb, staff.
Thank you. And our lone audience member and participant, should care to introduce yourself or...
I guess that must be me. Oh, I'm sorry. Actually,
we're coming to you, Barbara. There's actually we've acquired a visitor, so please join us at the table.
Sir, I thought I was the only one in the Adobe room.
You're next.
Rich Peterson from Dyn.
Okay, thanks, Rich. And Barbara.
Barbara Knight, representing the Registry Stakeholder Group from ICANN. From Parasite. Very early here. Sorry.
Okay. And good morning. And hopefully you've got some coffee as well. So you're more comfortable than we are. And then we have one other person, I believe, Peter Larson. Peter. Okay. Maybe he's just in the room and not on the bridge. So welcome everyone, and to this group where we had planned. A two-part meeting, which would be an update to the community on our activities and our work, which is essentially a repeat of the slides that were presented to the council on Saturday, and then we would have an actual substantive discussion on our working group agenda. Given the light turnout, the first part seems a little redundant. I think everyone here in the room is very familiar on what we've done to date and where we stand in the work process. Certainly happy to do that again if there's a burning demand to do so, but I don't see the utility in it. But one thing that we may benefit from, as Mikey and I were discussing over by the coffee and Danish table, is the is just kind of to check into our work plan between now and the next meeting, which we did mention to... Do you have that one slide, Lars, the last slide, where we talk about our schedule going forward? What's next?
You mean the work plan?
Yes. Maybe we could just go through that one slide.
Is this the computer that's running the slides in the room, too? Oh, okay. Anyway, just to rattle it off, James, the initial report is August, early August. Final report is envisioned for Buenos Aires.
Okay, and thank you for putting that up in the room, and thanks, Mikey, for finding that so quickly. So looking at the idea that we would have a final report published in Buenos Aires, which is the third week of November, right before Thanksgiving, I believe, for those in the U.S. In order to have that done, there's probably a document cutoff coming in the second week of November. And I'm sure Marika's got an exact date that she's going to pull up here, but I'm just guesstimating. For the purposes of this conversation, let's say it's the first or the second week of November.
No, it's actually the 28th of October that the publication deadline is. But if you're at the final report, you actually only have the 10 days for the council, because then you're not publishing it for community discussion, but you're actually publishing it for council consideration. So then the The deadline is actually 10 days in advance.
Okay. So let's say early November, late October, early November, which means that we would have had to have reviewed all of the public comments in order to produce that. So now we're backing into the review, and the comment period is probably on the order of 6 weeks. No, review and comment period. The comment period is 42 days.
Yes, and review, it all depends on how many comments you receive, because we have had working groups, I think you may recall, where we actually spent a couple of months actually going through, because the comments generated a lot of discussion, a lot of consideration. But indeed, if you only get two comments. But I do want to point out that early August is basically 2 weeks away.
Yes, so that's what we're working towards. As we're trying to, spoiler alert, Marika's to the end here. But so what we were saying is essentially that in order to do so, we would have to put our document out for public comment. Probably the our initial report would have to be ready for public comment in the second week of August, so that it can be ready for review in, are we saying, middle September? And that gives us enough time to review the comments, make any changes to reports, and get it turned in advance of the document cutoff deadline for Buenos Aires. So working backwards from Buenos Aires, it's starting to feel very, very tight. Now, again, all of this, we're leaving lots of room for the 30 comments that we're not going to receive, and the massive changes that will probably not be required to be made to our final report. But just in case, it's important to leave that into the schedule. So I think that the message then is that we've got a very short window to get to that initial report, and that is our next major milestone and what we should be driving towards coming out of Durban. Any thoughts on that, Mikey? Or?
Yeah, I think my thought is that we'd give it our best, but it does feel a little tight, especially with the variability of the review. I mean, if we get a break on the comments, we might be able to do it, but if we can't, I think one of the things we don't want to do is try to cram down a really tough schedule on top of this. Go ahead, Marika.
And this is Marika. I know often the ICANN meetings help us to work towards a deadline, but I think as we're here for the final report, at least working towards a deadline for submission to the GNSO Council, of course the next deadline that comes up is basically for the next meeting that will be a month after. Right. So I think there you need to give yourself some flexibility as well in saying, you know, yes, it's nice to have it submitted by Buenos Aires, but at the same time, it's not a point where you're going to discuss with the community. Normally, for an initial report, I think it's very important and very relevant, because then you have the opportunity to actually engage with the community and tell them, like, look, this is what we're going to be, or this is what we're suggesting as recommendations. What do you think? Please provide public comments. But for submission to the council, it's it's always good to have deadlines because it does drive work. But I think there you may, if you get to that point where you need more time, I think you would say, well, then we just pick the deadline for the next council meeting, because every time that's really 10 days before they have a meeting that you have a chance to submit your report and motion.
Thank you, Marika. And that's exactly where Mikey and I landed when we were having this little pre-meeting back by the coffee, is that our fallback and probably realistically, if we receive a lot of comments, will be that council meeting in December. That's happening before the holidays, and that the session in Buenos Aires, instead of a presentation of our final report, would be maybe a draft final or just a review of our recommendations. But I think that part of us don't. We've got a lot of time yet. Let's not surrender too quickly and to our calendar. I think we can get a lot done. I know that next Monday we're going to have a lot of folks coming back from Durban, and then we're into August, when it's very difficult to pin folks down, but I think we have a good team that work very quickly together, and we can set out a hit list of the things that we want to knock out before our initial report. We can get to that as quickly as possible. So, with that said, there are no other thoughts or cues on this particular subject. We'll move into a more substantive discussion that gets us a little bit closer to that goal. I see blue screens all over the. Is that?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the The Adobe room looks fine, but the this computer
nothing else is really working here.
Having a really bad day, so you know, I don't know that it matters.
Well, you know, when we wake up computers at 7:30 in the morning, they have a tough time.
Yeah, usually, though,
until you pour the coffee in them.
Usually, Macs are better. You know?
Okay. So let's take a look at, we have our agenda. We did the roll call. We did an overview of the work to the community, but in this particular case, the community is ourselves getting our own work plan in order. I think we're now ready to discuss the agenda items number 3 and 4. And we're discussing the charter question E and charter question F. And maybe, Lars, we can put charter question E up on the...
Come here.
Thank you. So where we last left our heroes is that we had engaged in the review of the feedback received to the initial report and the deliberation on the working group. And surprisingly, or not surprisingly, I guess, depending on your point of view, we very quickly, I feel, are gravitating towards a consensus position. So we'll read the charter question, which is that whether existing penalties for policy violations are sufficient or if additional provisions or penalties for specific violations should be added to the policy. And I think it was very quickly understood by this working group that that penalties or sanctions for policy violations are spelled out or prescribed as part of the RAA. Or in the case of the registries, the RA, and are the purview of ICANN compliance. And it would be a kind of an unusual and perhaps even concerning precedent for a PDP working group to start designing policy-specific penalties and then building them into the policies. I suppose the only difference would be if there was a clear link between some behavior or some action, like we saw, for example, in the ad grace period abuse policies. I think that would be maybe the only example of that, and I'm just shooting from the hip here. But I think that going through the review here, and that's down in that third paragraph where it says working group's observations. I don't want to read through that. Lars, I don't know if you want to summarize. That's a lot of text.
What a sigh. While you're figuring that out, Lars, this is Mikey for the transcript. You know, going back to the notes that I took, I think that the comment that we made was that we might want to amplify the notion that overarching sanctions structure of ICANN is something that we would, as a working group, want to point to and say, yay, verily. So in addition to not specifying additional sanctions, we also wanted to highlight the idea that working group level policy should not, in general, create unique sanctions. I think that was the other point that we were trying to make.
Absolutely right, Mikey, and I think we can all envision a patchwork in the future if every working group went off and felt like it was their purview to develop penalties or sanctions or for violating the particular policy. It could get very, very confusing, and I think best to leave those in the overarching framework of the agreements and the contracts. I'm just making this a little larger here. So where we arrived, and I will read this part because I think this is important, and this is where we're coming in for a landing on this topic, is the last paragraph that you see in the Adobe room, which says, preliminary recommendation. The working group concludes that the penalty structure, which has come into place with the 2009 RAA, and the additional catalog of sanctions that will come into effect with the 2013 RAA, once adopted, is sufficiently nuance to deal with the different levels of potential IRTP violations. Therefore, the working group recommends that the additional penalty provisions need to be added, that no additional penalty provisions need to be added to the policy at this
point.
Okay. Is there a second page that I can't see?
Oh, yeah, it's fine. If you have a real computer,
okay,
it's fine.
Sorry, the little Adobe app is failing me. The working group emphasizes in this context also that, as a principle, GNSO policies should not have individual sanction structures. Rather, it is desirable that the overarching RAA penalty structure is sufficiently detailed to assure uniformity and consistency of policy violation penalties wherever necessary. I think that captures everything. Maybe it just needs a little bit of polish on some of the language, but I think that's a comprehensive statement. And now we'll go to the queue, and first up is Chris.
Thank you. Just sorry to jump back to observations. It might be worth us actually referring to the clauses in the RAA on this, because I'm thinking about it from a reader's point of view, when we obviously get through to the report, you then would have to go and hunt anything out if you wanted to cross-check. So if we could refer to something more specific.
Okay, yeah, Lars, I think you're going where I'm going on this, but go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, is that there would be two references then, the 2009 RAA section and the 2013 RAA section.
Yeah, this is last. And there we annexed, the last sentence says annexed, and we actually have an overview of the various provisions that just capture the penalties that would, I can pull that up if you wanted to, that would be annexed to the report.
Thank you.
Now, just as someone who recently signed the 2013 RAA, I would point out that does create the potential that two different registrars would be sanctioned differently for the same violation, depending on which contract they have.
But that's always
true. But that's true for everything. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm just actually triggered by a conversation having with Bob here on the side. How does it actually work for registries? Do they have similar kind of penalties in their agreements? And is there any need to consider whether there should be anything as well if they, in the transfer process, you know, do something that's not allowed, or especially thinking more of the new environment we're moving into with many more registries? I mean, it's just something that's occurring to me now.
Yeah, and I think under the waterline, that iceberg gets very, very large very quickly, which is, who's going to be policing all these new registries? Unfortunately, with Barbara and her group of colleagues thus far, that has not been a huge issue, but it will be a growing one as we build obligations for registries in this process. I think registries have obligations under the current policy, and it was just always taken as a given.
This is Mark. I'm not familiar enough with the new registry agreement, because do they have something similar in there? Or, you know, I know they have the PDRP, or where they can take away the registry, but do they have anything like this where, indeed, if you, the first violation, you can, you know, get an email, second one, you get a notice. Does that exist for, I don't know, maybe Barbara knows how that works.
Barbara, you want to give a whack at that?
Hi, this is Barbara for the transcript. I was actually trying to raise my hand as well, but I don't know that it works on this one. It's my understanding that under the ICANN compliance program, there is a similar notification process whereby, you know, registry operators would be, first, I think the compliance group would try to, you know, work with the registry operator, but then to the extent that, you know, compliance is still an issue, then there would be, you know, notification sent, and it progresses. It's my understanding anyway, at least under the compliance program information that I've seen so far, that it would continue to progress similar to the way the registrar compliance program progresses.
Okay, thank you, Barbara.
As far as the new agreement is concerned, I haven't looked at it in a little while, so I would need to go back and take a look at it before I'd be able to speak, you know, to that one at all.
So to your point, Marika, you know, it seems like there's a reasonable action item to at least dig into that agreement and see if we need to annex that one into this as well and figure out some language. That's kind of one of those make your head explode kind of questions that's tough to figure out at this hour, but at least on the surface, this certainly feels like something that we'd want to tie in or at least look at.
Yeah, and this is Marika. And maybe just a question for us, and indeed to go to compliance and say, hey, you know, we're very aware of what happens with registrars, but what's actually the sanction policy in the case a registry would violate, you know, the transfer policy in one way or another, and it may be indeed that we can just say that, you know, maybe the same thing exactly applies, but I think it may be helpful to have the complete picture and be able to capture that, or if it comes back that, you know, that doesn't exist, you know, you may want to consider, okay, should something similar actually apply.
Okay, thank you, Marika and Barbara. And we'll maybe punt that over to Lars and say, can you please reach out to your counterparts in the registry relations office and the folks who are working on that or have finalized that registry agreement to see if there's specific areas that we can cite in this report. And I think that can address our kind of overarching concern that we've never really had to think about this before, but it is something that we will have to consider in the impending landscape. Okay, I'm getting a thumbs up from Lars, so. All right, thank you. So what else do we want to discuss with regard to sanctions? I think that this topic is fortunately fairly straightforward. Bob?
Yeah, thanks, James. This is Bob. And just bringing it up, it seems a bit odd now that they would ask us to develop sanctions. It seems like it is a topic that would be much better handled by, attorneys or. But is this something normal? Is there precedent that a working group would do that, or how did we end up with this one anyways? And isn't this a little risky in even bobbing it over to a working group?
So I think that's a good point. Is where did this come from? I think a lot of these charter questions were constructed beginning in 2007, 2008 by the transfers task force that Mikey was on. But so I want to say like the 2013 RAA, and in fact probably the 2009 RAA, was a twinkle in the eyes of the folks who were who were working on that, because prior to 2009, the only tool that ICANN had, ICANN Compliance had in its toolbox, was the death penalty or nothing. And it's only in the last two versions of the agreement that we've kind of put in these graduated sanctions or the spectrum of penalties. Mikey's a veteran of that group, so maybe he can fill us in on that. But he's waving me off. So I think that's probably the context of where it came from. I would point out that there was also, at the same time, there was a I forget the formal name, but it's the policy against domain name tasting, the AGP limits policy or something like that, which has specific financial penalties built in that once you cross a certain threshold, then you lose your ability to recover or refund fees. And I think that, there's another example of maybe, and to my knowledge, the only specific example where if you do X, then penalty Y, if you violate policy X, then penalty Y applies. But I think in that case, it's very closely tied because the refund and was the part that was being abused. So I think in that case, it's probably okay. But in some of these other ones, go ahead.
I'm just saying, the makeup of these work groups can vary a lot, and participation can vary. And you could see somebody, if their interests were such, they could develop sanctions that could actually affect things and swing things to their benefit. I don't see that happening. I don't think anyone would act that way, but I think that's the risk of letting a working group do something like that. So,
I think the other thing, this is Mikey, I think the other thing is that it kind of tidies up the picket fence if we get the sanctions outside the picket fence and just leave the policy part in.
Yeah, excellent point, Mikey. And I agree with you, Bob. It's not too hard to see. There's smart people at ICANN. It's not too hard to see a competitive advantage baked into a policy, so that Graham holds the pen on some sort of sanction that only applies to folks like GoDaddy, but allows allows other registrars to kind of. I'm just kind of picking on him because he's here, but it's easy to see where someone could design. Tailor-made policies with tailor-made sanctions to target specific players slices of the market, as opposed to applying equally and equitably across the whole industry. Right, that's a good point. And then I had a thing here, just another thought, and it's, I think, maybe tied on to Marika's point. Is who reports on a registry when they violate a consensus policy? I mean, right now, a registrant would call ICANN compliance. Exactly. I think it has to go to the registrars to call on ICANN compliance when a registry is, they believe, is committed a violation, because who else would have visibility to that? So as long as we're brainstorming here. Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika, but presumably like any other, any registrant, you can go and fill in the form that compliance has on their website. I presume you can do that as well on behalf of your registrar if you feel that a registry is in violation?
I suppose so. Does that form exist yet?
I think so.
Okay.
I think at least compliance is working on consolidating that, but there's a web form that you fill in.
Okay.
You indicate what your issue is about, I believe, and then it gets...
Well, these are good questions for a compliance session, I think, that's coming today or tomorrow. Chris?
Yes, I've filed a compliance complaint against registry and done it just using the form on the compliance on the website. I mean, the form itself is antiquated, and I think it's going to be updated anyway, because you'd need to send an email with attachments and explanation. But I think that's the way it's done.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Yes, Large, go ahead.
This is Lars for the record. There's a service performance complaint form on the compliance website, so you could definitely complain about the registry performance.
Okay, thanks, Simonetta.
Who can fill out this form? Is it only registrars or anybody?
I think it's a public form.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. With some CAPTCHA and spam controls, I hope. Okay, I see that Barbara has her hand up in the room. Barbara, can we weigh in on this?
Yes, thank you, James. This is Barbara. So I guess from my perspective and understanding how we've designed our systems in order to comply with the transfer policy, I'm not really sure what complaints would be brought. I'm thinking that most other, even the new registry operators, will probably be using back-end registry services providers who would also be designing their systems to automate the transfer process. So I guess there could be some complaints raised, relating to the transfer dispute, handling. But I'm not really certain, given how automated the transfer process itself is and validating, auth info codes and things like that, what complaints may arise anyway relative to this.
This is Mikey, Barbara. I think one of the ones that's popped into my head is an interesting use case, as long as we're doing make your head explode use cases today, is the vertically integrated registry registrar that's transferring out. So I can see some sort of peculiar, this is in the speculative realm right now. So I think that's right, Barbara, for today, but I'm not sure about tomorrow. I think tomorrow has got an interesting set of new use cases that we may want to leave some hooks in this policy to accommodate rather than maybe trying to envision them all.
So, Mikey, if I could follow up on that last bit when you were saying we would leave some hooks in this policy, you mean our recommendation as it stands is insufficient for that?
This is Mikey again. I think that as we've brought in this notion of referring to the registry sanction structure in this paragraph, which is what I thought we were sort of edging our way towards with your head explode idea, that would be the hook, that it's not in this right now. And so I think when we write that section, we just want to be careful how we do that.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. And Simonetta.
Maybe the recommendation could say something like, in case there's nothing in the registry agreements today, that something like that, something similar to what's in the RAA in terms of sanctions should be put there.
I think that I don't think we want to go there. I think unbuttoning the registry agreement today is going to be a hard sell.
But maybe, and I'm just going to jump in here, maybe, yes, I agree with you. We don't want this particular group to start digging its paws into the registry agreement, but we could perhaps issue a cautionary statement that we don't want the sanctions bit to be a negotiable point in the registry, for those registries that are going to negotiate their own specific agreements from the baseline. I mean, that might be one note, but I all of this stuff is going to be so much further down the road by the time our final recommendations are issued. I'm concerned that we'll be halfway through the game by the time that comes out. Marika?
Yeah, it is, Marika, something to watch as well, that of course what we're looking at, the system that is in place for registrars basically applies to any violation. What the charter question actually talks about is violations under the IRTP. So I think what we need to look at is indeed if for the registry, if nothing exists, whether indeed there needs to be anything within the policy that suggests or needs to be considered. So I think maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves and first probably need to find out what exists for registry violations and based on that information maybe decide, okay, there is actually plenty there, maybe along the lines what exists for registrars, so we don't need to worry about it. And if there is not, we need to consider, okay, for this policy, because the question is specific to this policy, so I think we have to be careful as well not to start designing an overarching scheme for violations, because that's not within our mandate within this charter. I mean, of course, a working group can suggest this is something that needs to be considered because we discovered that it actually is not there, but I don't think it's necessarily within the remit of this group beyond what violations or penalties should exist for IRTP violations.
Yeah, thanks, and that's a good point. And I think, we have such a low turnout and it's early in the morning, so we can indulge these kinds of discussions, but you're right, we are way beyond our remit in some regards on this topic. I would point out that with a vertically integrated, this is just something that popped into my head, with a vertically integrated entity that was violating IRTP, the sanction could be applied to the registrar side of that coin, because they would have signed both a registry agreement and a registrar agreement. So perhaps that's the avenue to smack a vertically integrated entity if it violates IRTP.
This is Mikey. You know, to sort of maybe wrap this one up, it seems like we've got a two-step affair here. First, we got to go find out what's out there, what pieces already exist and what form they're in, which agreements they touch, et cetera. And I think it's partly a conversation with compliance, partly a conversation with your fellows in the registry support group, and maybe a conversation with folks like Barbara. And then once we kind of know the lay of the land, once we know the structures and frameworks that are there, come back and draft the hook, if you will, the little addition to this that I don't envision being very big, but, you know, maybe it's just a sentence or two and a reference to language in the registry agreement. I don't know. But anyway, two stages. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering, would it be worth a side conversation, maybe a few of us just break off and do a use case under this new vertically integrated scenario?
This is Mikey. I'm the one that cooked that up. It is awfully early in the morning, and I think I'm off in the weeds on that one. I've been thinking, James pointed out something that's like, duh, you hit your forehead. It's like, yeah, they got a registrar, hit the registrar. So.
And I think that it's the beauty and the problem, or the strength and the weakness of ICANN, is that we send very, very intelligent people to these types of groups, and that we tend to try to solve every hypothetical problem. You know, maybe we just need to mention it, that we thought of it, we've observed it, we've in many regards feel it's outside of the scope of this working group, but just raising the possibility in some respects gives us something to push off on if and when that problem ever manifests itself.
you know, I'm not sure that we even go to that level of explanation. I think it's if the structures are there, I'm sort of envisioning a pretty matter-of-fact sentence that's pretty parallel to the one that's already here for the registrars. Pretty much echoes it and points to the equivalent sanction structure on the registry side, ta-da, and not even go into a big justification thing, just acknowledge that there may be a time when a registry needs to be sanctioned under this and point to how that's done. Finish it off.
Okay, thank you, and thanks for that interesting attention here. Did we lose everything here? Or?
Yeah, this is Mikey. I'm thinking that given the fact that the audiovisual in the room seems to be experiencing a lot of trouble. Oh, was it? Well, I'm just thinking we may want to wrap up now to give them a chance to get the room ready for this next meeting.
No, I think he well, let's see.
Aren't we due out of here at the bottom of the hour, or are we?
Quarter till.
Ah, never mind.
We have another 20, 25 minutes. So, yeah, no, it's okay. But we should probably wrap up this topic so that we can get to our agenda item number 4. And I should mention that we have been joined. Sir, mein Herr, would you please introduce yourself, name and affiliation? Yes, our new visitor.
Hello, my name is Volker Greimann. I'm a registrar, constituency, GNSO council member, and work with Key Systems, a registrar in Germany.
You're not on this one? I thought you...
I think he is our council liaison for this.
I'm your council liaison, yes.
Yeah. You know, what's this visitor stuff?
I was a visitor, sorry, was in air quotes for Barbara and the other folks that are on the line.
Okay.
So, thanks for coming, Volker. So I think that's probably a good stopping point for agenda item number 3. Let's take a look now at agenda item number 4. And we can give ourselves a good 20, 25 minutes to discuss that. Let's see. This is charter question F. Whether the universal adoption and implementation of EPP auth info codes has eliminated the needs for FOAs. And again, not going to force folks to revisit the entire working group observation, but we did discuss this one. This was an add-on from the previous working group, and I think what we determined was in the vast majority of transfers, the FOA is or feels redundant to the auth info code. However, in those scenarios where a transfer was later disputed or found or questioned whether it was legitimate, the FOA was determined to be invaluable in helping to untangle the chain of authority for that particular transfer. So very short, very sweet recommendation at the bottom of page 2, which says, at this stage, the group does not recommend the elimination of FOAs. I think we probably flesh that out a little bit and say why, or if we feel that that's sufficiently covered in our observations. But I think we could also leave the door open to potential technology improvements in the transfer process at some point down the road. Would say that we would take another look at FOAs, particularly in some future environment where all registrants, where all registries are thick, where all registrants are verified, where all, you know, where all the different loopholes and vulnerabilities that create the need for all these backup authorizations are maybe perhaps no longer as important as they are today. But I think that in general, there's really not. At least coming out of the working group, maybe we can change that today. It doesn't seem like there's a whole lot to discuss on this one.
And the only thing I'd add is that there is a pretty extensive compliance comment that ties into this. So, you know, we've got plenty of material to expand the why if we need to. You know, we've got the registry comment, and we've also got the compliance comment. So plenty of grist to add a paragraph that highlights why we think it's a good idea.
Just wanted to point out that the chat box, there are a lot of participants that believe that the volume is very low on the bridge. Is that me not speaking directly into the mic, or is that Is that my fault? Okay, thanks. We've got the looks like a whole team of audiovisual folks in here trying to address some of the early morning kinks
And typing madness in the chat.
Yeah, and meanwhile the folks.
So Theo, when I continue to speak in the same slightly bleary low volume, is it any better now? Natalie's in there. Anyway, we'll carry on mumbling, and if it's actually required that we speak more loudly, we're all not doing that because we all stayed up really late last night drinking, and it kind of hurts to talk really loud. But if we have to, we will. More coffee is suggested from Bladel. That's a good idea. But the problem with this room is the coffee's a quarter of a mile away, and you know, so it would end the meeting because it would take us that long to walk to the coffee and get back. Walker, go ahead.
Actually, if you leave through this door, you should have coffee right away because that's the booth room.
Oh, that's good to know. How are we doing in the out there in Bridgeland? Is this better now that they've turned the volume up? Give us a hint in the chat. David, way to go. All right, so they fixed the problem. They've cranked the volume up. Give us a ping in the chat again if it continues to be a problem, and off we go.
Okay, thanks. So did anyone else want to weigh in on this preliminary recommendation, and do we have sufficient supporting materials of why we believe this is the appropriate consensus position of the working group? Anyone else have any strong thought? This one doesn't appear to be very controversial. So, nope, I see nothing but thumbs up around the room and nodding heads. So I think that we're... Spinetta.
Maybe you could just capture in a couple sentences what you said in addition to what's written there with regards to maybe at some point down the road with this and that other document coming into play, you could take a look at this again, because you added something verbally to what's written here. Maybe if you just go back to the transcript, there's a few more sentences you can add, and that would make it round.
Okay, thanks. And since I don't remember what I was saying 6 minutes ago, I'm getting a thumbs up from Lars that he took some notes, and he will reference the transcript and see if there's anything new to be teased out of there. But I think that is, we'll do that for sure. Okay. Mikey, what are your thoughts on where we are now? Should we pick on Graham? He's so quiet over there.
I like the idea of picking on Graham a lot, just in general. So,
do you have any concern? These are the two easy ones that we're knocking out right now. So it's.
I don't think I love the idea of the we're leaving something in there just because it's useful. One in every 100,000 transfers, but we have no other mechanism around that at the moment. So, you know, that's the status quo, so be it.
So maybe, and I'm just spitballing here, but maybe the extra sentences that we were discussing with Simonetta and Lars would be that we would acknowledge that until such time as a replacement or some other improvement or enhancement is there, but this is what we've got, this is all we've got, so we've got to kind of hang on to it until we get something better.
That sounds like a very sensible suggestion.
Well, Lars, I don't know if we can easily capture that as well, but I think it makes a good point, is we shouldn't hang on to things. I mean, it's that kind of thinking that's why we still have fax machines, right? We haven't come up with something better or more universal, so we still drag these clunky old technologies around with us. Bob?
Yeah, I guess one alternative, which I'm not recommending, is trying to anticipate what might change. I think that's a can of worms that I don't think we want to open up. I like the tight solution, lock it down, and you know, if it does turn out that it needs to be reworked at a future time, then rework it at a future time. But I like the outcome we've got here.
See, and I didn't want to go too far down that road, Graham, because I'm hopeful, and this is just me just kind of daydreaming a little bit here at 8 o'clock in the morning is that I'm hopeful that instead of an IRTPE or an IRTPF or G or W, that we would just essentially, before we reform this or tweak it or come up with new FOAs or come up with new dispute mechanisms, that we would just say, you know, this policy, top to bottom, let's throw it out, let's start all over, and let's really look at what we're trying to accomplish here. And you know, maybe in the new environment, maybe something like that will be called for 1 or 2 years down the road. But certainly not on our plate today. Yeah, but we should leave that hook, borrowing from Mikey, in the report. All right. So now I have 8:28 here in Durban, and I wanted to mention something that did not make it to the folks on the bridge, is that we will have to wrap up just a little early because we do have a different group coming in. Is it NTAG? That will be coming into this room, and now that we are an hour into our session, we now have full functionality on our audiovisual capabilities. So go ahead, Marika.
This is Marika. I mean, not planning to start a whole discussion here, but maybe something to share with you and get some feedback on. It's maybe something that staff can take back. But as we had the meeting with the GNSO and CCNSO Council today, it triggered my memory of the discussions we've had with them on the, you know, change of registrant policy, which was really, I think, very insightful. We learned a lot from them. I think what we initially did is went back to some of our working group members to try to figure out, you know, what they thought of the processes in place, and I think they already identified, you know, those members that work with CCTLDs as well, identify some of the processes that that they are using. So I was just wondering, looking at the next set of questions that we have ahead of us, looking at the transfer dispute resolution policy, is it worth doing a similar exercise, speaking to some of the members that work a lot with CCTLDs to see what processes they actually have in place to deal with disputes? If it, you know, does it work for them? Is it effective? Do they get large volumes or not? Do they have registrants using that process, or is it only for registrars? So that may actually give us some intelligence to start our deliberations from. So if that is helpful, I can work with Lars, maybe that we first maybe reach out to some of our members here. I think we got a lot of input from Matt Serlin, I believe. I think Mark Monitor is one of those registrars that works a lot with CCTLDs, but I think there were some others. And you may have some suggestions of who we should reach out to from the registrar community to figure out. And as we get that feedback, then we can, as a next step, if we see indeed there are some CCTLDs that may have some useful experiences, even directly reach out to those and see if they're willing to share, or, you know, have a look at their website to see what information is available there. So it's just a suggestion triggered by the discussion, and just wanted to see if you think that would be useful or helpful as we move forward to the next part of our questions, I think.
Okay, thanks, Marika. And I think, yeah, that was something. Lars, did you post that to the list?
No, it's just this is last. No, just to YouTube.
Yeah. So I think that was a useful exercise for the previous IRTPC, and could certainly be something we could leverage again, particularly with Matt. And I think Volker's organization would also have some experience in there. I think that probably falls under the heading of one of our other charter questions, perhaps B, or more of just kind of an overarching A or B type of discussion, where we look at the TDRP and say what changes need to be made. Does it need to be made available to registrants, you know, what can we do overall just to kind of assess the usefulness of it? And I think finding equivalent comparisons in the CC space that might have some insights to be shared on that, particularly if there's one out there that is in a CC that is popular and used and effective, you know, and all the things that we say TDRP is not. You know, maybe if we stumble upon one of those animals, I think we definitely want to put that under the microscope and say, why is this working where the generic equivalent is not? So Mikey.
Two things. Theo has commented in the chat, why not reach out to DNIC, second largest TLD in the world? He's winking. But, you know, I think the one thing I'd add to all that is, given that we're trying to run this on a pretty aggressive, tight schedule, if I were to pick which things you work on first, I'd pick that and pick up the stuff we just assigned you in the last part of the conversation, the reach out to compliance. I'd put that second in the list, because that one's a lot less time critical. It's not on the critical path. So as you walk out of here with action items, I'd just sequence that one first, because it would be really nice to get that feedback fairly quickly.
Yeah, thanks, Mikey. That's a good point. We have to kind of prioritize the different things that we're piling on staff's plate if we're going to make some of these tight deadlines. So, okay. So I think good suggestion, Marika, and certainly we don't know what's out there, but we can ask and then see what we can find. Shake the trees, I guess, is the... Was that from a couple years ago? Okay. So where does that leave us now? We're at 8:33. We have to clear out of the room here in 12 minutes. We've covered our agenda, and we've got a crowd that's just now starting to get caffeinated a little bit and waking up and getting punchy. So what do we want to put on our discussion for the next 10 or 12 minutes before we talk about confirming our next meeting, which I already think we know the answer to that, but who knows? Marika, go ahead.
My point was, well, I think the one remaining item you have is to confirm the next meeting. I mean, maybe it's I don't know if anyone here has feedback indeed on CCTLD, so if we already, of course, get pointers, it will be easier to find. So I don't know if, you know, Volker, for example, knows indeed the DE, if they have something that he thinks, well, that may translate well in GTLD terms, or whether there's nothing in place. Maybe it would at least, I think, help us, or help Lars especially, to start that that process.
This is Mikey. I think another person to put on the list is McKaylee. I mean, he certainly does a lot of cross CC stuff, and you guys do too, right? So,
hey, this is Graham.
Back on the board.
We've got EPAC, which does all of our CCTLDs, and lots of them, so we can reach out to them too.
You know, I think the this is Mikey again. I think the key deal is if you all could do that soon, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, our guy is here, so we can just wander over and find him.
That's the kind of soon I'm looking for.
Coming right up.
Okay, so maybe we can at least put that action item on the list, and I know that a couple folks are going to charge off and do that in advance of that, but some of the folks that aren't in the room, for example, McKaylee is more of a passive monitor of this working group than an active participant, so maybe we can, and Matt Serlin as well. So. So going to the last agenda item, the next meeting is scheduled for Monday, July 22nd, which at 10 a.m. Central Daylight Time is approximately 12 hours after my flight back from Durban lands in O'Hare. So, if the group wants to have a meeting, I will bite the bullet and have a meeting, but I see a lot of head shaking on the table that I think a lot of folks are... still going to be recovering, especially those who have to cross 6, 7, 8 time zones to get back to their home offices. So do we want to just call it today and say, not going to have a meeting? I think that's been our SOP for all the transfer working groups, is we don't subject people to that. Yeah. For all working groups. Okay. So not just the transfers. All working groups kind of take a little bit of a break when people are getting on or getting off airplanes for ICANN meetings. So... But future note, Lars, for future working groups is that when building the work plan, make sure you bracket the ICANN week with free days, because it doesn't look like we get a lot of participation anyway. I think we tried to have one before coming that was also very lightly attended.
Yeah, it was real light. I would also point out the added feature that we may have a strike on South African Airlines on Thursday, which is going to broaden that bracket just a little, at least for a few of us.
Don't say that, Mikey. Don't say that. I hope the Star Alliance gods come in and say, no, we'll kick you out of our club if you don't. So, okay, so I think that the general sentiment, for those on the phone, I'm getting a lot of what we would call nonverbal body language when we suggested having a meeting on July 22nd. So I don't know if that can be captured for transcript purposes, but let's just say that very, very strong reactions here in the room in terms of facial expression. So there will be no meeting then on July 22nd, and our next meeting will be on July 29th at 1500 UTC.
You just got a thumbs up from Barbara in the chat as well. And she doesn't have to go anywhere.
I was
going to
say, Barbara doesn't get a vote on this one. So, okay. So that brings us to essentially the end of our agenda. And a few minutes prior to, so we'll just turn it over to Mikey here to bring us in for a landing. And
landing gear down. We're done.
All right, thanks, everybody. Really appreciate everybody who, all the diehards who came out early this morning. I know that, you know, last night was music night and tonight's gala night, and a lot of folks probably would, there's about 97 things people would rather be doing than coming here and talking about transfers, so, except for staff.
There's nothing. There's nothing I'd rather be doing.
So thanks, everyone, and thanks for those on the call who got up, you know, before dawn to participate as well, Barbara and the other folks on the bridge. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good rest of your meeting.
See you, Barbara.
Bye.